You are listening to a sermon by Rosie Pereira, recorded on Sunday, March 28, 2010, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I enjoyed this new song. I had not heard this one before, but I was glad to see that it had a tie-in with Revelation as well, because I was feeling that there needed to be some way of linking Palm Sunday with the Revelation passage that was the next scheduled one I was planning to speak on in my little Revelation series. And I've kind of twisted and pulled and stretched to make it work. But it actually, the more I read these two passages side by side, the more I looked at comments and understood the background of the Revelation section, the more I realized that it really is essentially the same kind of thing, talking about the exalted Christ in Revelation, and the Palm Sunday passage is talking about the glorified, exalted Christ coming into Jerusalem. And while the Christ in the John passage is preparing for his crucifixion, and so that isn't the end of the story. He's being hailed and lauded as king at the time, but it's a premonition of a king who is going to die. The king who is exalted in Revelation is triumphal, finished his work on earth, and so there isn't the negative follow-up of a crucifixion in that passage. So most of what I'm going to do today is unpack the Revelation section for you. I will allude back to John 12 a couple of times, but Revelation is so filled with allusions and metaphors that it's often hard for us to read it, and we often ignore it because of that. And that's part of the reason I'm doing this series of about five sermons, give or take, over a period of however long it takes me. I'm just picking out some of the important chunks and passages to help us appreciate that book that was such a big part of the early church, understanding God as present during times of suffering. So it was written out of a time of suffering and persecution, and that is the context to understand it in. Let me also tie into the first introductory sermon I gave, because that was quite a number of months ago, and most of us have probably forgotten what I was talking about. I introduced us to the genre of apocalyptic literature and the fact that it's got a lot of symbolism in it. And I talked about the fact that it alludes to the Old Testament more than any other book in the Bible. And that's going to be very important as we look through the passage in chapter 1 today. And then finally, one thing I said, which is going to be key today, is that it is centered in Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth. So this sermon is focusing on the character of Jesus as he appears in the book of Revelation. And this particular passage is the most significant of the revelations or visions of Christ. There are several of them, which Eugene Peterson talks about in his commentary called Reverse Thunder. It's not a straight commentary verse by verse, but he talks about several of the key passages in Revelation. And he says, this one is the most elaborate, but not the only vision of Christ in the Revelation. There is also a vision of a man standing as though it had been slain in Revelation 5, showing the action of redemption accomplished in crucifixion. There's also the vision of the birth of Jesus in Revelation 12, the vision of the Lamb surrounded by the 144,000 in Revelation 14, the Son of Man crowned and armed for judgment in Revelation 14, and the vision of Christ mounted and leading the armies of heaven, being called King of Kings and Lord of Lords in Revelation 10. And finally, there is the Christ of the Second Coming in Revelation 22. In all, there are seven Christ visions distributed throughout the pages of the Apocalypse. But let's get back to focusing on this vision of Christ in Revelation 1, which sets up Christ as the omniscient one who will give his diagnosis and prescription in the next two chapters, the following two chapters, for the seven churches, which are representative of the church as a whole. Let me read again this passage from the new RSV. I, John, your brother, who share with you in Jesus in the persecution and the kingdom and the patient endurance, was on the island called Patmos because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. And that speaks to the, I'm going to interrupt as I read this, speaks to the times in which this was written. It was a time where the church was being persecuted, and John had been exiled to Patmos because of his testimony. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, that would be Sunday, and being in the Spirit would be, perhaps he was in prayer, or perhaps he was in the state of being given a vision would have been a spiritual ecstasy of some sort. And I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet, saying, write in a book what you see and send it to the seven churches, to Ephesus, to Smyrna, to Pergamum, to Thyatira, to Sardis, to Philadelphia, and to Laodicea. Now those seven churches are going to be the seven that the letters to the seven churches are written to in the chapters 2 and 3. And those are the order in which they appear. Those would have been the order in which a messenger coming from Patmos to the mainland would have delivered a letter, a circular letter. So those are geographically in order. Then I turned to see whose voice it was that spoke to me. And on turning, I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands, I saw one like the Son of Man, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash across his chest. His head and hair were white as white wool, white as snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze, refined as in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of many waters. In his right hand he held seven stars, and from his mouth came a sharp, two-edged sword, and his face was like the sun shining with full force. Now, I haven't stepped through that because that passage is going to be the key of, that I'm going to be spending most of the rest of the time on. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. But he placed his right hand on me, saying, do not be afraid. I am the first and the last, and the living one. I was dead, and see, I am alive forever and ever. And I have the keys of death and of Hades. Now write what you have seen, what is and what is to take place after this. As for the mystery of the seven stars that you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven lampstands are the seven churches. Now, this, the part in verse 18 which says, I am the living one, I was dead, and see, I am alive forever and ever, gives Christ the qualification to comfort those Christians who were suffering tribulation, and many of them death, or would be facing death for their faith during this time. He has conquered death and thus infinitely qualified and understands what they're going through. It also, this passage, the whole section from 12 to 16 shows Jesus Christ as divine. And there are many elements in it which confirm that. So now I'm going to step through the section, the middle section from 12 to 16, because that's the most important. I mentioned before that the Old Testament is very important in understanding the imagery, because these people who had been reading this would have been steeped in the Old Testament. The Jewish Bible, the Hebrew Bible would have been the first Christian Bible, because the New Testament didn't exist yet. So they would have known lots of background passages from Daniel and Zechariah and Ezekiel, and they would have recognized immediately some of these allusions that we need drawn out to us today. So let us go through and look as we're going at the printout in your bulletin. Verse 12 talks about turn to see whose voice it was that spoke to me. That's an interesting mix of metaphors. Here's a voice, and he turns around not to hear the voice, but to see the voice. Obviously, he's talking about to see who's speaking the voice, but just the use of that mixed metaphor is interesting. And then I said verse 13. It's actually verse 12. The seven golden lampstands. Jesus explains what this means in verse 20. He says these are the seven churches, and we already know what the seven churches are that he's talking about. And these churches are representative of the whole of Christendom at the time. The letters were intended to be sent to these seven, but they are meant to be read by all of the Christians at the time. So the lampstands represent the churches, and thus they represent all believers. The image of lampstand comes from the furnishings of the temple. In Exodus, there is an explanation of instructions for the lampstands for the temple. It says they are to be made of gold, and there are to be seven of them. So people hearing this would have made a connection between temple furnishings, and this would have given a sense of being in a temple. There is also an allusion to Zechariah chapter 4, where the prophet Zechariah has a vision of a golden lampstand with seven lamps on it. Now, you know the menorah that's used in Hanukkah. It has one stand, but then there are lamps on it. So this is probably that sort of a thing, a sevenfold lamp. And in that passage in Zechariah, the angel said to me, "What do you see?" And I said, "I see a lampstand all of gold. There are seven lamps on it." I said to the angel who talked with me, "What are these, my Lord?" Then the angel who talked with me answered me, "Do you not know what these are?" I said, "No, my Lord." He said to me, "This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts." So the sevenfold lampstand in Zechariah's vision is directly related by the angel to the Spirit of God. It goes on a few verses later in Zechariah to say, "These seven are the eyes of the Lord which range through the whole earth." So now look back at our context in Revelation. Just a few verses earlier, in verse 5 to 6, John is writing to the seven churches, and he says, "Grace to you and peace from him who is, and who was, and who is to come, and from the seven spirits who are before his throne." So, and the place in that where that is translated seven spirits can also be translated sevenfold spirit. So we have all these mentions of seven. Seven lampstands, the seven churches, the seven spirits, and seven stars. All of this referring to the sevenfold spirit of God and the churches. Continuing on in verse 13, "And in the midst of the lampstands, I saw one like a son of man, clothed with a long robe." Now, the one like a son of man is in the midst of the lampstands. If we understand the lampstands to be the church, or the churches, and the son of man, as I will explain that language in a bit, is Christ, then Christ is speaking to John from amidst the churches. It's a way of reassuring him, "I am here with your churches that you've left behind. I'm with them. I'm in the midst of them." So I mentioned the Son of Man. That is an extremely important phrase. Some translations, modern translations, I think very few of them have actually removed that word man, but they think it's gendered language, so they translate it as a human being. But most of them retain it as Son of Man, because it is a quote from the Old Testament, and it's significant. Jesus uses that phrase when he's referring to himself multitudes of times. He talks about the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. He says, "Foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." And he says, most significantly for this passage, he says, "Truly I tell you, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." So Son of Man is Christ's own title for himself as coming king, but human divine, Son of Man. That's what that title refers to. And it is also, not surprisingly, from an allusion to the Old Testament. In Daniel 7, we have a passage from chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, which Daniel has a vision. He says, "I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom." So there again, the title Son of Man coming out of a passage referring to his kingly reign. There's also an apocalyptic book which was not part of the Bible, but it's part of what's called the pseudepigrapha of the Old Testament, which are extra writings that were not considered inspired enough or whatever to make it into the Old Testament canon. But it's the Book of Enoch, and it is still a significant book that is quoted from, referred to in many of the other New Testament books, and so it's good to have a reference for it, and I was able to find a copy of it. And again, and this also is the origin of some of this imagery. It does mention the Son of Man, and it also talks about his head was white like wool, and whose countenance has the appearance of a man. So just that as a bit of background. I won't quote the whole passage because it's not a familiar one, but it's an interesting source. Another source for many of these images is the longer passage in Daniel 10. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I looked up and saw a man clothed in linen with a belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the roar of a multitude. So, stepping on to the next image in verse 13 is clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash across his chest. That was the garb of the Israelite priesthood. So, Aaron was the first priest, and the long robe going all the way to his feet and a golden sash could also have been a kingly attire, but its use here evokes the image of a priest because of the temple atmosphere with the lampstands. We've already talked about his head and hair were white as wool, and his eyes were like a flame of fire, which comes from that Daniel passage. And the attributes from this figure of the Ancient of Days that was quoted in Daniel 7, the Ancient of Days was understood to be God, the one who had been present from the beginning of time. And the white hair as white as snow, would sort of imply an aged or beyond time person, also of wisdom. And also here in this situation with Christ, it implies purity. His hair was white like pure wool, some translations put it. And his throne was flaming with fire, and his wheels were all ablaze. That's again quoting from Daniel 7. So the attributes of the figure of the Ancient of Days, who was in the context of Daniel, was a judge, bringing justice to the people who were Israel's enemies. That means that this vision of Christ glorified is understood as inheriting or sharing those attributes with God as judge. So far we have him as king, glorified king. We have him as priest. We have him as judge. We have him as understanding persecution. And we are not yet at the part with his... Okay, the next part is with his feet were like burnished bronze, refined as in a furnace. This is, again, references to Daniel. You know, the story of Daniel in the fiery furnace. And Daniel and his friends survived that furnace as if it were a kind of testing. And there are also passages in Daniel that talk about Daniel's interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a statue that had different kinds of metal in it, and the feet were made out of a combination of clay and iron. And that was a weak material which broke when a stone hit it. This is a contrast to that. This is burnished bronze, which is the strongest of metals. It's a combination of copper, which is... it's a combination of two metals, which are... One is strong and one is flexible, and between the two of them, it's the strongest kind of metal. So burnished bronze would be a strong foundation to have as feet. And so that gives... explains him as strong. Finally, the second to last image is his voice was like the sound of many waters. That's from Daniel and from Ezekiel. Daniel 10:6 says the sound of his words were like the roar of a multitude. And then the Ezekiel passage compares God's voice to the roar of many waters. So again, that enhances the comparison and the identification of Christ with the divinity, with the divine being. Verse 16 In his right hand he held seven stars. Jesus has already identified in verse 20, or later identifies in verse 20, these stars as representing the angels of the seven churches. These angels are often understood as being representatives of the churches. And in some Jewish writings, the seven lamps of the tabernacle are viewed as corresponding to the seven stars which resemble the just that shine unto eternity in their righteousness, which is an allusion to Daniel 12. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky, those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So the stars that he holds in his hand are the righteous ones, and also the angels representing the churches. The next allusion, from his mouth came a sharp two-edged sword. You'll recognize that one from the New Testament passage that's very familiar. In Hebrews 4:12, the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing until it divides soul from spirit, joints from marrow. It is able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart. That is another part of the image describing him as judging those who are the enemies of the righteous. And the two-edged sword language also is an allusion to Isaiah chapter 4, where he talks, Isaiah says, "With righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth." And in 49:2 it says, "He made my mouth like a sharpened sword." So both of those are probably in mind in this writing. And then finally, his face was like the sun shining with full force. Daniel 10:6 is the source of that allusion. It talks about face like lightning. And also Judges 5:31, where it says, "So perish all your enemies, O Lord, but may your friends be like the sun as it rises in its might." Well, that ends the exegesis of this passage, which is the bulk of what I wanted to explain today. I don't think that it's necessarily going to give us a big help in our lives for how we receive this message and what we do with it. But understanding that these images come from Old Testament scripture and they tell us about Jesus' qualities. Let me review them again. It tells us that he has the qualities of being God, being divine. He's compared to the Ancient of Days. He has the same white hair like wool. The voice that he has is like the sound of many waters, like God in Daniel. He's also a king, we know from this Son of Man language. The Son of Man was the ruler of the kings of the earth. Daniel 7 talked about the Son of Man who was given dominion and glory and kingdom, and an everlasting kingdom which shall not pass away. So we know he is divine, we know he's a king, we know he's a priest because he was wearing priestly clothing. And the priest's role for us and for the people back then, the priest's Old Testament role was to represent the people to God and represent God to the people. So that is a role that Jesus Christ is continually serving for us in his exalted state in heaven. And then next is the image of a judge, one with eyes like flames of fire, one who carries a two-edged sword in his mouth. He is going to bring justice and recompense to those who have been wronged and trounce our enemies, essentially. We don't live in a state where we're being persecuted for our faith like those did, like the Christians in the time that this was written. But we can look to Christ as our advocate and one who will make things right. And then finally, the strong foundation, the feet of burnished bronze. He's one who survives, the one who has lived and who has died and lives again. The resurrected, exalted and glorified Jesus Christ is all these things. So taking it back and tying it into Palm Sunday again, his triumphal entry into Jerusalem when he was lauded as an earthly king is a foretaste of his ultimate exaltation as divine king. Last night, I don't know how many of you turned off your lights and turned off your computers for an hour at 8:30. It was Earth Hour. How many even knew that it was Earth Hour last night? How many actually did it? Ooh, great. I took a nap. And that explains why I didn't finish the sermon, because that was 1 hour where I would have finished. But anyway, I hope that that has unpacked a little bit of the complexity of this passage and given us a taste of what the revelation tells us about who Jesus is for us today. So, thank you.